Say. Okay, welcome to this meeting, open meeting of the hosted by the Consistent Democrats, anyway, open forum. And its subject today is Trump, war, and genocide. And I should probably talk for about half an hour if that's all right with people. And then we've got as much time as we want to discuss. I'll start and I'll say, well, the elevation of Donald Trump to the White House again after 4 years since the failure of his beer hall putsch is an index of how destabilized US imperialism has become as it declines from its position of world hegemony. And I think the analogy with Hitler's beer hall putsch is actually relevant, although the circumstances are not identical. I mean, maybe we could discuss some of the similarities and differences later on. But it was clear in January 2021 that Trump had massively lost the popular vote in the US to Biden. And of course, he'd lost the Electoral College. And yet he tried to mobilize a mob of fascists and other irregulars to keep him in power by force. But he did not have the support of the US state machine. I think that was soon clear. And so the putsch was actually doomed to fail. And he had no legitimacy in what he tried to do on January the 6th, 2021. By rights, he should have been locked up for that. And his followers could, legitimately, in terms of the way the US works, have been shot. And if there were black militants trying to do something similar, no doubt they would have been shot, you know. And yet, 4 years later, he's in office again, you know. And this time, he actually did win the popular vote and the Electoral College, and there's no dispute about that, you know. And I think that represents the fact it's not a democratic achievement by Trump in any real sense, but it's an index of the sickness and decay of American society, of US society, its bankruptcy, and its multiple senile political diseases. And it reflects the fact that democracy has fallen into massive disrepute. And because of that, many of the losers in the capitalist game are inclined to give democracy a kick by voting for an openly or virtually openly anti-democratic figure. But I mean, be that as it may, not only was Trump elected in a classic and clear manner, although his margin of victory was not huge, he won as a convicted criminal, which was the first time anyone had ever done that in US history. Even though the crime he was convicted of was fairly token, albeit salacious, it was lying about an affair with a porn star and paying her off to keep quiet so as not to allow the publicity to stop him being elected president in 2016. I mean, it's salacious and it's petty, and it wouldn't even have been a felony if it was not linked to trying to fool the electorate. But there are much more serious charges. Hang on, I just need to do something. Much more serious charges, including armed insurrection and treason, that could have been and should have been laid. He was clearly guilty, but they were not laid, or at least the paler version that was laid was stalled and then ruled out of order by the judges. And the reason why not is that he had appointed during his first term enough Supreme Court judges to stop himself being held to account for that later when he lost the election in the 4 years of Biden's term. And Biden and the US mainstream were too cowardly to do anything about it. The congressional arithmetic in Biden's first 2 years, at least, would have allowed him to expand the court with judges who were not actually Trump's people, or not right-wing extremists, in other words. But Biden's people were gutless and complicit by their failure, which is the nature of the imperialist bourgeoisie confronted with extreme reaction. And even when the judges ruled that Trump, in ordering extra legal violence in his supposed official capacity as president in January 2021, was immune from prosecution, there actually was a fairly simple way that that could have been countered. And it's this, that Biden could have declared a state of emergency and rounded up these judges and rounded up Trump himself. He could have had them thrown in jail. He could even have had them shot in his official capacity, because the judges have just ruled that a sitting president was immune from prosecution for any such extra-legal acts. It was a gift. You know, it could have been used as a gift to get rid of them. And then he could have had the remaining judges countermand that judgment, you know, but not retrospectively. I mean, that's how he could have done it. But there's always a solution if the political will exists. But of course, the political will did not exist, because Biden was just as reactionary as Trump, although with important differences in how that was expressed. So what undermined Biden's presidency and what propelled Trump back into office? And there's one word almost that explains why that happened, and that's Ukraine. You know, it wasn't even Gaza, because everybody knows that for all the complaints about Biden being Genocide Joe during the Gaza extermination, that Trump would be worse. And in fact, Trump is worse on that, and we'll find that out in due course. I think the current ceasefire in Gaza doesn't contradict that, because Trump pulled that manoeuvre because Netanyahu had clearly lost in Gaza and made Israel the most hated entity on earth. And it was damage limitation. You know, the deal was a major hostage exchange, which was Hamas's objective all along. They could have had that in October 2023. The IDF's Gaza campaign was collapsing because too many troops were refusing to fight, and many more were suffering from mental illness because of the terrible crimes that they committed, that they'd been ordered to commit, and they did. You know, but it doesn't do the mental health of the army any good collectively. You know. That's actually a problem that the Nazis knew about, which is why they tried to get other people, other fascists, when possible, to carry out their most brutal massacres in occupied countries. They had things called SS Einsatzkommandos, who were people from other areas who were dragooned into the SS and did the really dirty work in many cases. You know. But anyway, I mean, Israel had no one to outsource these massacres to, really. They had to do them themselves, pretty much. So they lost to Hamas, and they've had to at least take a breather in their barbarity because of this problem, you know, because of their army, you know, falling to pieces. Biden was too subservient to the Zionists to even tell Netanyahu that he was losing, you know. But Trump really doesn't have anything to prove. Everybody knows that he's politically a Likudnik in reality anyway, you know. And there's no contradiction between Trump brokering a ceasefire in Gaza and funding and encouraging the escalation in an annexation of the West Bank, which is happening now. In the West Bank, Hamas, of course, don't run things. You know, it's the Palestinian Authority who run things, the Quislings. Although they are an important opposition. And Trump talks about Gaza as real estate, in a way similar to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who wants Gaza settled and the population thrown out. You know, and now there's talk of shipping the Gaza population to Indonesia, which I think is even less likely than driving them into Sinai, to be honest. I mean, Hamas will defeat that. You know, they would need a massive army and huge numbers of aircraft to do that, plus the cooperation of Indonesia. And there's no chance. Indonesia has just joined BRICS, you know, and its population has been mobilized to support Palestine and the people of Gaza on a similar scale to Yemen. I just don't see that happening in a million years. There's no way they would get that to happen, you know. But it's another wheeze or another idea that they've got as to how to get rid of the Gaza population. You know. Getting back to the West Bank, you know, although Hamas are there as an opposition to the stooge Palestinian Authority, it's a different battle. And a lot of the atrocities can be carried out by armed settlers who are not there in the West Bank, you know, i.e. not by the actual IDF, but who can act as backup, you know. So the situation in the West Bank is very dangerous. But the eruption of the West Bank, when it happens, and it probably will result in more wars for Israel with Yemen, with Hezbollah, with Iran. And I mean, Syria is a big problem, but that may be overcome. It could even be overcome by Iranian and Iraqi use of force in Syria. That's a possibility. I mean, the one thing ISIS has done is they broke down the barrier between Iraq and Syria to a degree, And that could actually be made use of and by Shia forces who support the Palestinians, even despite the chaos in Syria, I think a regional war could still defeat Israel despite Syria, And it could completely derail Trump's administration economically. I mean, you would see the likely, in the event of a war involving Iran and Israel and perhaps the United States, you would see the closure of the Straits of Hormuz, which would mean that spending for arms and arms exports for such a war would go through the roof. And it would mean more inflation in the US. It would mean oil prices would go through the roof, and Trump would get the blame, just as Biden got the blame for the Ukraine-linked inflation. And Trump's popularity is not great. I mean, it's important that he won the election, but it was not a landslide. And it could still, even if it were a landslide, we saw with Biden, it can still be punctured quite quickly if things go wrong. I mean, Biden, as I said, lost. It's actually Harris who lost as a substitute, lost by a landslide. Although Trump did not win by a landslide. And that was because of the administration's own failings. The same could happen to Trump. So war with Iran might be a logical extension of his Zionism, but Iran can really hit back if it's hit and do really severe damages to the US economy. I think that fragility, despite Trump's ultra-Zionism, is something of a deterrent to Trump carrying out that logic and involving himself in an all-out war with Iran, Of course, in the last exchange of missiles with Israel on October the 1st, Iran did some very serious damage to some of Israel's strategic air bases and intelligence bases with ballistic missiles. And some of these are essential to Israel's possible plan to attack Iran, the types that we were talking about. Israel's response to what Iran called True Promise 2 was actually fairly token. And Iran did not even bother to respond to to their response. It was pretty small, really. The Houthi, on the other hand, in Yemen, have not only been very effective and persistent in blockading sea traffic to Israel in the Blacks in the Red Sea, but they've also received hypersonic technology, which really must have come from Russia, if you think about it. I don't see where else it could have come from, given them extremely fast missiles that they've done considerable damage to Israel's military with also. And of course, both Hezbollah in Lebanon have suffered greatly from Israeli subterfuge, like these, like the booby traps, electronic devices and things. Pagers and terrorism and assassinations, but they've still been able to cause Israeli settlers to flee from much of Galilee because of the potent nature of their rockets. And I don't think that's even over in today. The Israelis were desperate for a ceasefire, because of the potent danger of those rockets and the fact that they had driven much of the population out. So despite his ultra-Zionist politics and his loyalty to Likud, whatever, West Asia or the Middle East or whatever you call it could be just as problematic to Trump as Ukraine was to Biden, I think, which is why he may not, maybe reluctant to get too much involved. I mean, regarding Ukraine itself, Trump's latest threat and ultimatum is quite feeble, Sensibly, he rejects the firing of missiles into Russia, and he stopped that. It's very clear that's stopped there. It was the hallmark of Biden and his liberal sort of liberal imperialist types risking World War III over the last 3 years, but particularly in the last 3 months, actually, since he lost the election. He's been trying to provoke something big with Russia by actually authorizing the direct firing of advanced medium-range missiles, not really long-range missiles, from Ukraine against Russian, you know, military facilities, even against Russian cities. You know, they're not really long-range missiles. They can't even reach Moscow, but they are substantial, in their range. It's a real provocation. I mean, Trump's threat of sanctions are a bit of a joke, really, because such sanctions, they're already in place, most of them, and B, what he can do now, it would have no leverage. You know, the actual trade that he's talking about, targeting, with tariffs, really, not sanctions as such, is only around $2.5 billion, you know, which is a tiny amount by today's standards. You know, his new taxes or tariffs or whatever he calls them, that these new sanctions, would make very little difference. And the Russians are laughing at it, and the Egyptians and the Europeans and the British are fuming because it doesn't really count for much. You know, Zelensky's now, because of that, in some ways related to that, Zelensky wants 200,000 European troops to come to Ukraine to help him. But there's absolutely no chance of that. You know, they haven't got the troops without the United States. They haven't got the resources. The various Western European powers just haven't got the resources to do things like that. It's an insane idea. It's not going to happen. I mean, regarding China and Trump's relationships with China, it's very, very early days. And so far, nothing seems to have happened. It's only been a week or a half since he's been in power. But the same contradictions at this point attend war threats against China than with Ukraine and the Middle East. You know, I think they're at odds with Trump's America First policy, which really, you know, if you're getting on to the meat of it, what epitomises it is this idea of unification with Canada and annexing Greenland to the United States, which is really, you know, the sort of in the manner of Alaska previously, probably want to buy it, although put pressure on Denmark to sell it, you know. But the aggression that symbolized by Trump's threats to take back the Panama Canal is only the start. I mean, one of the first acts of Trump in office was this time round was to put Cuba back on the list of, from the point of view of the US, of state sponsors of terrorism. You know, he's also done it to the Houthi, surprisingly. The Houthi said that it's safer to be on this list than to be regarded as a friend by the United States. You know, at least you know for certain that they want to get you, which I think is an appropriate thing to say, to be honest. I think the potential threats to Venezuela and any other disobedient country in South America, I mean, you can think of Nicaragua, and of course even Brazil, you know, despite their grovelling to Trump, really, and grovelling to Trump and Biden, actually, they've managed to exclude, they've vetoed the inclusion of Venezuela in BRICS, you know. But Trump has threatened BRICS itself with sanctions and tariffs to try and sabotage the creation of a BRICS settlement currency or a basket of currencies as an alternative to the US dollar. I mean, at his inauguration, you saw Milei, who's the far-right president of Argentina, who subjected that country to a massive neoliberal shock treatment over the last 6 months more, you know. He was an honoured guest at Trump's inauguration, you know. And he runs a classic sort of neoliberal privatisation scam at the expense of workers and the poor, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It's a classic neoliberal programme, you know. But all in all, this MAGA prophet project internationally appears to involve a temporary retreat from much intervention in Eurasia in favour of a massive expansion of US power in the Americas. I think that that reconsolidation, including the plan for a unification with Canada, which you could call Anschluss, is unlikely to be achieved, actually, in Trump's current term. I mean, the Canadians are not very keen on the idea. If it ever happens, it will have to be carried out by a successor, given Trump's age and the term limits and things, if some war doesn't blow his presidency way off course. Then again, if that succeeds, if it were to succeed by some measure, whether it would have to be enticing Canada into a union. I don't think there's no way they could possibly annex Canada. It's absurd. If they were to succeed in enticing Canada into an expanded US, the plan is that that thing, that expanded body with Greenland hopefully on board as well from his point of view, would then be perhaps ready to take on Russia and China and seize back its hegemony, which everybody knows it's currently falling apart. And I think that's what MAGA means, really. That's what Make America Great Again means on a geopolitical level. It's a retrenchment, isn't it? It's a retrenchment in order to conquer back its status at a later date. But in terms of domestic politics, it means extreme social and political reaction. It was epitomised by the Project 2025 idea that was put about before the election, which Trump denied that was actually the plan. But irrespective of what was the plan, the examples of what's being done now are manifold, and we won't be able to capture all of them here, but you can point to a selection of them and hope we've nailed down the most important. I mean, just going back to the international level for a moment, but with massive domestic implications, there's the withdrawal of the US from the Paris Climate Accord, which is not a new idea, of course, and also from the World Health Organization, which is a newer idea. In both cases, it's bizarre, it's witch doctor, anti-scientific politics, irrespective of the bourgeois and treacherous nature of those bodies. It comes from a backward, right-wing, climate denial, idiotic position. I mean, Trump's position on COVID, which is inject yourself with bleach, that shows exactly the level that he's movement is really on, and it endangers the US population, and they will become aware of this. It will lead to a big backlash at some point. Then there are mass deportations, including of migrants who came to the US legally under Obama. That's going to end up in court, but the Supreme Court is a Trump dominated body, so who knows? The attempt to abolish birthright citizenship, which is explicitly at odds with the 14th Amendment of the US Constitution. Will the Supreme Court side with Trump against the letter of the US Constitution? It's possible. I don't know whether it's true, but whether it will prove that way, but it could do. There are states in the US that are now declaring that fetuses are people, and that fetuses have the same right as any other person, in quotes. So women who seek abortions can be literally treated as murderers, and that's a result of the abolition of Roe versus Wade, which was a previous action of Trump's court, although it happened when Trump was not in power, there's a possible criminalization of the use of the postal service to convey abortion-related medication, in effect making it practically impossible to distribute the medical basis of abortion rights, even in states where it's still legal. I mean, that's not yet happened, but it could happen. There's just talk of doing that, But the US population doesn't want these things, and it's a persistent opinion polling has shown that 60% of the US population wants to retain abortion rights. What else can we see? We see the abolition of executive orders. And it's bizarre that they're still executive orders only, that go back to Lyndon Johnson's presidency in 1965, straight out of the civil rights movement, that forbid discrimination on grounds of race and sex. You know, this stuff has been forbidden, but not by law, by executive order, over all those decades. And now Trump has just abolished it by administrative order, by executive order. Why were they never made actual laws as opposed to executive decisions? Because the Democrats all this time were cowardly, treacherous, useless. What does Musk want to do? Musk wants the Supreme Court to declare that the National Labor Relations Board, which was created in the 1930s by Franklin D. Roosevelt to enforce basic regulation of working conditions, Musk wants the Supreme Court to declare that unconstitutional. Right, that's a major attack. You know, it lays the basis for huge attacks on a whole body of labour rights that go back to the working class upsurge of the Great Depression and the organisation of the CIO in the 30s, etc. And there's much more. A lot of it needs to be studied and analysed in depth, because I think even this is only scratching the surface. There needs to be a detailed indictment of Trump's administration to actually get to the bottom of exactly how far this stuff goes. But it seems like pretty far reaching. Even this is enough to be able to see that this is not an ordinary administration, either Republican or Democratic. It's involved in an all-out assault on labour rights and democratic rights that exceeds anything in the previous history of the United States since the Civil War, you know. And it far exceeds what the Reagan administration did, you know, which was bad enough, but they didn't really see all-out or open war on things like the NLRB and the basic gains of the civil rights movement in terms of legal equality. And that's the real meaning of Musk's war against woke, which really he revealed what it was really all about with his Hitler salute at Trump's inauguration. You know, not only did he give the Hitler salute, but he also recited a paraphrase of somebody pointed this out, that he recited the following words after he did it. He said, "It is thanks to you that the future of civilization is assured." Right. Well, what some commentator noted, this is actually a cut down reference to the famous 14 words of neo-Nazis that are associated with that salute, which is the following phrase: "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." That is the famous phrase of the Order, which is a famous American neo-Nazi organization. And what he said was a paraphrase of that, obviously diluted, but it really does evoke that, you know. And this is what was described by the Anti-Defamation League as the most popular white supremacist slogan in the world. And that's ironic, because the ADL, which characteristically smears all defenders of the Palestinians as anti-Semitic, actually excused Musk and tried to deny that he performed the Nazi salute. You know, I mean, this is somewhat different to the Biden administration's involvement in promoting Nazism in Ukraine, which is really in tune with what every US administration, the Democrats or Republicans, have done since World War II. I mean, as Karl Marx once put it about things like this, he said this. And he wrote this in 1853. He said, "The profound hypocrisy and inherent barbarism of bourgeois civilization lies unveiled before our eyes, moving from its home, where it assumes respectable form, to the colonies, where it goes naked." And that's in an essay called "The Future Results of British Rule in India," in the New York Daily Tribune, actually, in 1853, January the 22nd. And with Musk, they're now going at least semi-naked at home. I mean, that's fairly new. It's newish anyway, you know. So, you know, at this point, Trump has come to power by constitutional means, and there are likely to be some limits on what he can do to some extent. But on the other hand, the Supreme Court, which he appointed in his first term, has given him wide latitude for extra constitutional actions. And he has pardoned the January 6, 2021 insurgents. He's got the beginnings of a private army, though probably not the really developed Qaeda army that Hitler had in 1933. But that is likely to grow and consolidate. You know, there are resemblances. Though many who voted for him are not fascists, in fact, some are very misguided workers with a degree of class consciousness, actually. But, you know, there's a strong whiff of fascism running through this administration, you know. And the workers' movement on the left needs to err on the side of caution and realize that they're now operating in a quasi-fascist environment under this administration. And there is a need for anti-fascist united front tactics in dealing with it. You know, there's a need for mass struggles against it. And the US left has to prepare itself to lead them. And I'll conclude there and I'll open it up to discussion. Thank you, comrades. Cheers. Who wants to speak?
I'll speak briefly.
Yeah, sure.
Just to say that was a splendid talk. And I did notice, I do watch MSNBC on a regular basis. And it tends to be very anti-Trump. And one of the things I did learn this morning is that the position of Denmark on Greenland is that there was a position agreed many years ago, I think in 1917, that if Greenland never came up for sale, Britain would be the first country to have buying rights on it.
All right. Interesting.
So I don't know if that's why Trump wants to talk to Starmer next week.
Anybody else? Who wants to speak? Mark.
Oh,
Mark, sorry, I couldn't
It's all right. Like Clive, I mean, I study the US media from here, and I couldn't tell you what the US left looks like. There are an awful lot of liberals, and of course, there are probably thousands of individual activists peppered across that large country. But there's no actual left organization left, if you see what I mean. Despite those who may claim to be, they're not. So I'm not sure where the mass dissent would come from over there. That's it, really, other than to say thanks a lot for another excellent talk.
Susan.
Oh, right. Okay. I'll lower my hand. Two things. One is, I would take issue in the sense that the Hunter Biden laptop is real. And yes, I have seen it. It should have been part of the Democratic pool of knowledge because it was real. The dishonesty of the CIA and FBI in not reporting the truth about a laptop that they had been in possession of for more than 18 months, which would have fatally wounded Biden's electoral chances if it had been in the public information, which it should have been, points to, you know, the moribund nature of democracy in America. Which is not to say that there aren't problems with the Constitution, but it is to say that the sheer amount of money, you know, which runs to many billions now to run for presidency, means that democracy is fatally compromised in America, and that the, shall we say, manifest destiny doctrine both parties aspire to that sees America as, you know, the only country which should be ruling the world means that the constant interference in other countries' democracy becomes ever greater, and whether or not you have an isolationist position from Trump or an interference position when it comes to things like Israel and so on, then the truth is that it's the fact that America is both corrupt and incapable of ruling itself, never mind the rest of the world, but will not stop trying to destabilize every other country in a desperate attempt to remain in power, that is so dangerous. I don't think there'll be that much difference. I think as America lurches further and further to the right in an effort for the oligarchs, the plutocrats who actually control America, and who you can see at Davos, you know, the WEF and the Bilderberg Group and these various unbelievably rich people who think that they should run the world, that, you know, they're just going to select more and more stupid stooges, whether it's, you know, Biden, as demented as he was, with Blinken and Sullivan as total hypocrites actually running the government, or whether it's Trump, who, he's not the village idiot, but he is not a politician. He is a real estate agent with an eye to trying to grab as much loot as possible. And, you know, these are people who are not politicians, who are selected to be thrown into a political landscape in order to undermine political, you know, adult political relationships between the various countries of the world. Because this, for me, this is about globalism. And Trump's just a symptom of that. And he will be encouraged by those globalists to be more and more outrageous. Yeah. And, you know, I think we're in for a hard 4 years. I think we are in for a much worse time when it comes to the fight between Vance and whoever it is that they select for the Democrats. And I don't think that will be Kamala Harris, but I think we will see, because, you know, we're going to see a period of denial from the Democrats, which, again, as you say, will leave the left very both castrated, shall we say, politically, but at the same time determined, because of their control over the deep state, to completely undermine what Trump is doing, which may make him resort to more and more outrageous and probably authoritarian actions. I do notice that some of the January the 6th political prisoners, shall we say, have refused or have demonstrated against Trump. I don't know if you saw. Yeah. And therefore, they do not wish to be used as a political agenda. And looking at the students who are, you know, throwing their university career away, many of them going into huge amounts of debt, I think we're going to see a back to survivalist, which I don't think, you know, the other big thing is TikTok, which has backfired massively and broken down the barriers for ordinary people to talk to in America, to talk to ordinary people in China, and to compare living standards. And the thing that might bring down the Republicans is the complete destruction of infrastructure. That is certainly true here, but it is much worse, as far as I can see, in America, with the rise of tent cities. You know, it's not just potholes here, but it's actual bridges falling down, trains, you know, massive trains routinely crashing. I don't think, you know, they want to militarize and spend more money on it, and they couldn't possibly spend more money than they are at the moment, but they are not winning. So will America survive the next proxy war? I think Trump is just going to bluster and because he's a real estate agent, he'll bluster much, much worse now than he is. It'll be who calls his bluff, won't it?
Okay. Yes, I guess. Yeah. Mark Copestake. Yeah.
Okay. I think from what you were saying, Ian, it sounds as though Trump won't be able to do a lot. I don't know, but I hope so. Maybe that'll be his downfall. The second thing is, I agree with Mark, it's difficult to see who the left are in America. Mm-hmm. It's there's a lot of neoliberals that they call left, like they do in this country. They call Starmer a lefty communist fascist, and because they've got no knowledge of politics, that's what they call the left. The other thing is what Susan was saying, I agree, Trump's not a politician. Neither Starmer, really, I don't think. And Nigel Farage definitely isn't one either, so we seem to have this plethora of people that aren't politicians. The other thing is, I wanted to ask a question which I put up on the message group before. What's the fundamental difference between Trump and people like Biden and Obama the butcher and Reagan and Starmer and people like that? What's the difference? Because essentially they're all kind of like, they're fascists, aren't they? So, or are they? So that's it, really. That's basically it.
Well, just on that, I don't think they're all fascists. I think Trump is bordering on being a fascist. He certainly has a base of support which is in part fascist, but he also has an element of support that is workers who are alienated from liberalism and who are not necessarily, who have some class consciousness. I'll tell you what was an indication of that was the Luigi Mangione killing of this SEO of United Healthcare, because that actually struck a huge chord in the American population. And there's a lot of people who think, oh, bloody hell, he deserved it. Great. Bastards and all this sort of thing. That sentiment went right through the parties, including Trump supporters saying, I'm sure Donald Trump is not keen on the idea of people being bucked off for being CEOs or being the parasitic ultra wealthy bastards being killed by action, load of Avengers or whatever, action, albeit undisciplined action from below. He wouldn't be very keen on that at all because someone could shoot him on the same reasoning, you know. But that sentiment is very widespread in America. That's why that case caused such shock, you know. But yeah, I don't think Biden is a fascist. I think Biden is a politician, but he was so senile he could hardly act as a politician. That's the problem. He was a, you know, in terms of saying that he's not a politician, he's a senile old man who should have been in a rest home. That's the truth for much of his term. Whereas the people who were actually running the show were people like Blinken and Sullivan, as people have said. You know, I think that's true. You know, I think that's who was running the show. It wasn't the deep state. I think the deep state is a little bit of a dodgy concept in some ways. I think the bourgeois state is a particular entity, and Trump's talk of the deep state as something different that really targets him, I think is a bit of a misnomer, to be honest. It's his own paranoia about people in the bourgeois state who think he's unfit for office. And of course, they have a very good reason in many cases to think that, because he is unfit for office in bourgeois terms. And the fact that he gets elected is really a sign that much of the population thinks bourgeois democracy is shit and you might as well elect a clown, you know. And of course, he had this in this country as well with Boris Johnson, except that Trump is a more outspoken and bragging clown than even Boris Johnson was, you know. But it's the similar thing, isn't it? You know. Yeah, I mean, what Susan says about the laptop. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there is always pressure to cover up shit and that discredits bourgeois politics, and that was a prime example, you know. Even bourgeois democratic politics is appallingly squalid, and Of course, this overlapped with the Ukraine, you know, the Ukraine intervention and tactical differences in the ruling class about whether you should be, you know, inciting a near World War III type conflict in Ukraine, or whether you should be doing something in other parts of the world. You know, there are tactical differences in the American ruling class about what to do. Which, of course, is linked up with the question of Zionism as well. And there is some evidence that some of them, like the most extreme Zionists, are not that bothered about Ukraine. You know, Trump is a prime example. You know, on the other hand, what Trump will do now, the one thing that distinguishes Trump, he's in the same position as Obama, because he can't be re-elected. He could do what he could do almost what he likes on some questions, you know, including the questions of Zionism, because although he was funded by the Likud, he could, in theory, tell them to bugger off because they can't fund him again because he can't stand again, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what that's another unpredictable element in U.S. politics at the moment. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, how significant was the Biden laptop? I think it's significant in terms of the corruption of bourgeois politics. Whether it makes Biden a fascist, I'm not sure it does. It makes him a corrupt bourgeois democratic politician. But he certainly allied with fascists in Ukraine. But then again, every American president since World War II has done the same thing. He just has to do it more openly, you know. I mean, there's incredible scandals in American bourgeois politics, you know. Incredible scandals in British politics. There are paedophiles in the Tory, in both parties, actually, you know. All sorts of appalling shit, you know. But anyway, who else wants to speak?
I would say, I got my hands full. The kill list that's being funded by, that was funded in Delaware, which is Biden's state, by Ukraine, and the open support for people, American citizens, being on that kill list was shocking.
Yeah, it's all shocking. Yeah.
And open support of assassinations, whether it's Israel or Ukraine. And I would say this is part of the hurt that Israel supporting Ukraine and the Nazis against Russia has deeply affected the Russia. It appears the Russian psyche, who are still and the ditto is true for Britain and, you know, Europe's support for the Nazis in Ukraine, particularly things like, you know, the D-Day and the Holocaust Memorial Service. Those are things, the sheer Russophobia and Sinophobia are part and parcel of the, you know, grotesque rhetoric that is American politics. And I'm afraid it's creeping into, you know, the UK and the EU as well. You know, there is no neutrality anymore. It has to be you're with us or you're against us. And even if you're with us, we'll still attack you if we think you're not doing everything we've told you to.
I'll tell you what's also interesting. Sorry, carry on.
No, please go on.
What I was thinking about is Slovakia, where there is an attempt to create a colour revolution in the EU country, you know, because Slovakia is an EU country where its president was recently nearly murdered only a few months ago, you know, what, 8 months ago?
By Ukrainian supporters.
By Ukrainians, yes, or supporters of
Ukraine. Not a single EU leader actually admitted that.
Yeah.
But they would have done if they could have linked it to Russia. It's the same with Nord Stream.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, definitely down to Biden and the continuing attacks. The other thing is everyone's quiet about the Ukrainian nuclear blackmail.
You mean the stuff about Zaporozhye? Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Which, you know, I think what people forget is that there's literally hundreds of American military bases biowarfare, chemical warfare that are placed on European soil, including the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to fight World War III in Europe. They have no intention of fighting it. And that, this is why I think you didn't talk about Mexico, but again, this is why America is placing itself to fight World War III, but not anywhere near America. They seem to think that they will survive it. They don't seem to have any understanding that nuclear war will be the end for everybody. They think they can just carry on bullying people, same as Israel does. No?
Yeah. Who else wants to speak? Anyway,
we haven't mentioned... Oh, sorry, Marie.
I'll say a few words then. thank you, Ian. That was a very good introduction. Seems to me that it's important, this discussion, because we don't want to keep saying that fascism has arrived. There is a right-wing movement of world capitalism towards fascism, and it's very evident with Ukraine and with Gaza and with Palestine. But at the same time, what's happening in the United States is particularly important because fascism has not established itself there yet. And what we are studying here is the process which goes towards it and the forces which are mitigating against and which are, in fact, in opposition to it, like the fact that the masses, the broad masses of the United States, I think that 60% or so, they were against, 60% or so, were against the pardon, Trump's pardon to the people of the coup. So if there was a tendency the other way, we would see it here. It's only just an indication. It's not everything. But nevertheless, I have looked at Trotsky, what we studied when we first started our Sundays. We studied how Mussolini triumphed and in what next. I think it was in the beginning that we did this. What next to the question of the German proletariat. And I looked at that and it seems to me that I would like to be, to situate myself. In what way can we take advantage of the knowledge that Trotsky gave us when he started discerning fascism? And then he said in Italy and in Germany, it was fascism or Nazism, but it had not been like that in Spain, for example. And yet it just looked quite similar, the process in Spain. So I think at another time, we should go back perhaps to this and to have a look, because Trump is a bloke who is very rich. He's not from the working class. This is a billionaire of some kind. And so is Farage. And so is Musk and all these people he's got around. So I think that this points to the fact that there is a process happening from above, and by taking government, Trump has now the state apparatus in his hand. I believe he's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. I should imagine he is. Mm-hmm. And this is very obviously hugely dangerous, but at the same time, it's not like he has built a fascist movement and then he has worked his way up and then his police, his militias have come in confrontation with the organs of the state. This has not happened. It happened to a certain degree on this Capitol riot, And I think this is interesting. I forgot who said it. I think Suzanne, that even these people now are not really all with Trump. I think that we have to discuss this more about are we in fascism? This is not fascism. It has not arrived. There's a process to go. And I think Ian is very very right when he points to the need for the United Front. The United Front must be surely all the forces against the Nazis and the fascists. And I think obviously what's happening in the United States has an enormous impact in Britain, because in the United States you have the center of finance capital, the oligarchs, the plutocrats like Susan Cole. All these have concentrated, they have their power, the seat of power of world capitalism is really there, and it wants to absorb all the other countries and rule them, and abolish, I would imagine they would abolish all the frontiers and make just a world dictatorship. I think if they could do it, that's what they would want to do. Capitalism sees a need for a world planning of the economy, and it cannot do it because in capitalism every boss is in competition with the other one, so they cannot do it. But as a class, they see the need of making a single fusion of them and then imposing themselves on every country. Obviously all that is dreams, they cannot do it. But it has an effect nevertheless in the fact that they tried to do it in Chile, they failed, but they really tried. And I can see, for example, here, the rightwards movement in Britain is fed and is directed by forces which obviously come from the CIA and from the Zionist, Judeo-Christian Zionists, who are working in conjunction with each other. And they are intervening in each country to take over politically and in other ways. I think I would like to go back to this and to define in due course a program for Britain, the program of the United Front for Britain.
Oh.
Sorry, the dog in the background barking. But I agree with Marie about the about fascism not being there yet. It's not helpful to say that we are when we're not. It rather demeans the concept of fascism. The other thing Marie mentioned. Italy and Germany. The key things about the Nazis and the fascism in Italy is that the class nature of fascism in those two countries was different as well, because in Nazi Germany, unfortunately, it did have a large working class base. In Italy, it was very much the other way around. And of course, Maui said what was happening in Spain was a bit different. As for Trump and for us not being politicians, I think that's bollocks. They've been around for quite some time. They are. Trump certainly has. He was involved in politics a long time before he actually became president. The idea that they're somehow not politicians is far too conspiratorial for my liking. They have been around and involved in politics for many years. They may have started off in business, but they certainly know how to play politics in a way that some of their supporters don't. Anyway, that's my piece. Thanks.
John. You're muted.
I agree with what Paul was just saying about them being, you know, like having this distinction about them being not politicians. I don't think that's very helpful to say they're not politicians. But the thing is, you know, I mean, you know, there's so many gaps in my knowledge about this whole thing about American history and about the economy and whatever. For, you know, for example, right? I mean, I don't know enough about the American labor movement, but a good starting point would seem to be a review I once read of Robin Blackburn's book on slavery. Robin Blackburn writes about slavery and America and stuff. And he said, Karl Marx has been proved to be highly over-optimistic about the developments of the labor movement in America. He has factually been proved that he was highly over-optimistic about the prospects of the development of the labor movement in America. And that's the way it seems to me, you know, that is a big problem, that America, you know, its labor movement is even worse than Britain's, and much worse than much of Europe's, you know, let alone the Bolsheviks in Russia. And, you know, the gaps would have to be filled in my knowledge on there to really talk about what's going on now. But, you know, this thing that Trump's a fascist, or is he, or isn't he? I don't know. I'm open to argument, but I'll tell you in about 10 years' time whether he's a fascist. If I'm still around, I'll be able to tell you in about 10 years' time. Because we can't tell. Often we can't tell at the time exactly the trajectory of a particular movement and particular individuals. And that's still in a state of development.
Just on that, let me make one point, is that when Mussolini came to power, it was not clear for quite a long time what his regime was really driving about. And it took years to consolidate that regime in power. And for several years, you could get away with a lot, actually, you know, and people did. You think Gramsci was only jailed about 1926 or something like that, you know. That's when the crackdown really, really began. But it was quite ambiguous for a while. You know, it took a while to consolidate. So, yeah, you are right to a degree. It's not always clear immediately. Hitler was very clear. It was always because Hitler was the model of Mussolini plus. And it was always very, very clear what his movement was about. That it was an outright fascist movement, that it aimed to sweep all before it and destroy everything in its path. But that wasn't true of Mussolini when he came to power. It was much more ambiguous. It took a long time, because it was the first example, that's why. It took a while to consolidate itself. And what exactly Trump's regime will turn out to be like, it's still up for grabs, really, I think. You know, that's my view anyway. But I think there is a lot of ambiguity about his mass base, you know. His mass base is a mixture. There are, as I said, there are class-conscious workers who support, who give him a degree of support because they think the other side are so appalling, you know. And, of course, they are. And it's a blow against bourgeois democracy, because you think bourgeois democracy is shit. It's all corrupt. It is. You know, Biden's regime was appallingly corrupt, and Susan is right about that, of course. So they vote for somebody who says it's all, you know, is more or less openly hostile to democratic rights and to democracy. And you see that, you know, obviously, there's an element of attempting to deny what Musk did at the inauguration. He gave two Hitler salutes, and then he sort of, oh, didn't really mean it. I'm not really. Why are you calling me a Nazi? I'm a Zionist. I can't be both. Yes, you bloody can, actually. You know, and he is. You know, but that is the. You know, it's a dog whistle, isn't it? It's aimed at, you know, fascists will say, oh, yes, that was a fascist salute. There's one of ours, you know. And others like the ADL, who are Zionists, who have their sympathetic to the genocide, are trying to obfuscate this, you know. But there is that fascist element in it, you know. But the consolidation of it is not clear, and that's the question. And I think there is room for a lot of United Front activity because the consolidation of it is not clear, and we have to stop it becoming what it, you know, we have to get the working class movement mobilised to split away the misguided class conscious workers who support Trump to a class project. That's what the US left. There is a US left. It's very fragmented, you know. It also includes elements in the DSA, you know, the Democratic Socialists of America, who support Bernie Sanders or whatever. Those people need to be split from the Democrats. And there are people who are trying to do that, of course. You know, there's a range of different smaller left-wing tendencies in America who are interacting with those people. But like in this country, it is small, it is fragmented, it needs regrouping and pulling together into something coherent. And the biggest problem we've got is the lack of coherence in this country and internationally among the left. There are so many fragments. That needs to be overcome politically, but it will take time. And we're in uncharted territory in many ways. In resolving it, you know. Susan, sorry, and then Paul.
Okay, I was going to say the reason why I say people like Trump is not a politician is because he's always seen his right to buy his way into politics. So he's tried to register as Republican, as a Democrat, as a Reform Party. He ran for 3 months in the Reform Party in 2000, dropped out after 3 months because he wasn't getting any headway. But, you know, he thought he could just simply to buy his way in. And he didn't really start standing until 2011. Yep. By which time, you know, he's already in his late 60s and long past the time when he could have learned the ins and outs of how the politics works, which is why so many of his statements are so crashingly ignorant, because he just doesn't know how the political system works and he has no time for it. It's just about, I'm rich, I'm seen as successful, I'm popular. He used his popular TV media appearances to buy his way in. And in many ways, that's why I say he's like, what's his name, Farage, because he simply, again, it's the use of media and other things to get himself into the political thing, because he is not seen. You know, he found it much easier to get into politics via the, you know, European Forum and actually campaigning against it. And it's about the populist. It's not about any interest in really having a political agenda and standing for something. Again, the MAGA problem is, you know, he wants to go back to a past when everything was rosy and everybody had a picket fence and there wasn't any of that nasty racism or genocide and, you know, his whole arena. So I would say he isn't a politician, whereas Biden, 50 years of being in Senate and politics, has just shown how atrociously corrupt the entire political system is and why people are so sick of it, and particularly career politicians. It's okay. But I do think that there, you know, it's like Cameron as a foreign diplomat. He was a disaster. Why? Because he has no respect and no comprehension of how business is done when you have a particular role to play, because they've never had to earn it. That's why Boris Johnson was such a disaster. Yep.
Paul.
Go on, Paul.
As for the Capitol Hill protesters that don't necessarily go along with Trump, what do we know about those individuals? Because not everybody that is opposed to Trump is necessarily left-wing. Some people oppose Trump because he's not right-wing enough. So I would like to know if any comrades has information about those individuals that don't wish to actually go along with Trump, because they may not necessarily be who we think they are.
Just coming back on that, I think you're talking about the people who refused pardons or what? Because those people were convinced that they... There's one woman, there's an old grandmother who said, well, basically I was in a cult and I decided the cult was no good at some point. And basically told him to stick it. You know, I've only heard of two cases like this, actually. I don't know who else you mean. I mean, I'm thinking of the American Workers Movement, the American Left, some elements of the American Workers Movement, some elements of the trade union bureaucracy support Trump in America. You know, I think it's a Teamsters union that supported Trump. You know, as opposed to the Democrats. So different unions have even supported Trump. You know,
weren't they furious with Biden after the after him turning on them at the beginning of the Biden administration for the rail? Isn't it the railway workers?
The railway strike. He banned the rail strike. Yes, yeah. Yes. He behaved like Ronald Reagan did to the air traffic controllers almost. You know, they didn't throw anybody in jail, which Reagan did, but nevertheless, he banned that strike. He used administrative measures to ban that strike. You know, so yes. Mm. But I think that's not the reason that the Teamsters defected to Trump. I think they were always likely to do that anyway, because they have a tendency to look at the arms industry and whatever and consider that's where they met. You know, there's a layer of trade union bureaucracy who sees the arms industry and American power as the way to guarantee the American standard of living. And that element does exist in the – I mean, it exists here. But it's refracted through the Labour Party and the Labour right. But in America, where there is no Labour Party, it gets it refracts between the two different parties, two different bourgeois parties. And although it's not always true in practice that the Democrats are less militaristic than the Republicans, sometimes it's the other way around. But in terms of formal ideology, The Republicans ought to be the more militaristic and openly imperialist party, but in practice it doesn't. It's more complicated than that, because we've seen with Biden, you know. But there are people who solidarise with militarism. That's the way. That's what guarantees our standard of living. Therefore, the unions support people like Bush and, you know, whatever, you know. That's not the left. That's the union bureaucracy. The country made no workers' party, you know. No Labour Party of any kind, really, apart from the fringe around Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Socialists of America, which is still quite small. You know, it's in tens of thousands. It's not in the millions, put it that way. You know, Who else wants to speak? Sorry.
Did you catch any of Trump's speech to the World Economic Forum?
Not really.
No. I've got to study it a bit more. What surprised me was Alexander Mercurius claiming on the Duran that the reception he got from the plutocrats, particularly the American businessmen who were there, I suspect that will include Larry Fink, were terribly pleased about Trump's plans. And I thought, well, that doesn't bode well for the if the globalists are happy about it, then that doesn't bode well for the anti-woke brigade, who think that somehow Trump is going to, you know, keep us isolationist and at peace. because he wants his legacy to be the Nobel Peace Prize, amongst other things, doesn't he? Well, he was very upset with Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize within a few weeks just for being the first black president, wasn't he? He's a real grudger. It doesn't bode well for the UK that Starmer upset Trump so very much in the last 6 months. But the good news is he might actually completely screw up NATO.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know it's a poison chalice, but the Ukraine war would fall apart if America pulled out of NATO and refused to give in to all the Zelensky aspirations of, you know, World War III being fought, and the next phase next year being fought with NATO troops, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's going to happen anyway, but yeah. Mark?
Yeah, some of the left have been saying online, I'm not sure whether they are the left or whether they're just pretending to be, that they think at least Trump will stop all the wars. I know we've touched on them, gone around this, but do you actually believe that? Because I don't. And if he does, how would he do it? He can't do it he surely can't do it through diplomacy, because that would have happened. And was it him that kind of brokered this ceasefire between Israel and Palestine, or was it actually Biden thinking that he didn't want Trump to be the first? That's it.
My view is that I suspect the reason that Netanyahu went for it is because Trump was in power, or just coming into power, to benefit Trump as opposed to Biden, you know. Because he's, I mean, this is the reason they went for it, but it's been on the table since, in formal terms, it's been on the table since last May, but in reality, they could have had it in October 2023, you know, because that's more or less what Hamas were calling for anyway, a big exchange of prisoners, and they got one, you know. Anybody else?
It's difficult. I gather Trump has allowed the £2,000 bombs that Biden had finally slowed down on the delivery, that they are actually going to go ahead. But he's putting pressure on Egypt to take the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank into Egypt. He's talking about over, you know, them accepting over 1.5 million refugees. And he's putting pressure on that. Policy. And it's not at all clear how on earth that would work.
I don't think he's got any more chance of that than Biden had, to be honest. But anyway, Paul, sorry.
I agree with what Mark said just before he came back in. There are some people out there who are supposedly on the left who really grunt the Trump caller, you know. Even Caitlin Johnson, I had to stop following her because she did have come out with some crap sometimes. The other day, she put out a post saying that Trump was qualitatively lesser evil than Biden, and then she said, let them learn, in which case one or two of our comrades intervened, so I think do people really think he's going to pull the US out of NATO? Come on, pull the other one. He taught the talk before the election, but he's already demonstrating in a big way that there isn't going to be any major changes in US foreign policy. And I'm surprised that so many that appear to be on the left fell into that crap. And I agree with Mark. I think some of those people possibly aren't that left-wing. A lot of them are just Andy Trott, to be honest. I've noticed that trend going on as well. Anyway, thanks.
As I've said, America wants to fight World War III in Europe, and it, you know, it'll need its bases. I don't disagree, but I do think that it will. It's not going to fund NATO anymore in Europe. It'll do what it does with South Korea and Japan and all the rest. It'll make us pay for them to occupy the bases that they've got.
Well, they've just said that Trump has signed off some no bombs to go off to Israel.
Yes, so
you know, he's saying that that Satan now should just finish them off. I expect he means Hamas and the resistance.
Yep, I agree. Anna.
So it doesn't look good.
No,
he's looking for real estate and beachfront properties.
That's right. Mm. He actually said that the area that the Palestinians occupy, that there was beachfront property, and, you know, making noises about what could be done with these people's land. It's quite outrageous, and nobody's saying anything.
Yeah.
What he is interesting is he doesn't want to invest in rebuilding Ukraine, although I suspect since BlackRock own most of it and Bill Gates, that will go ahead, don't you think? But with European and British money, for whatever's left of it. And that is probably down to Russia taking the lithium mine, don't you think, after Leslie Graham's outburst?
Yeah. Well, Russia will build the parts of Ukraine it exits anyway. You know, it already has done. It's rebuilt Mariupol, which is a terrible disaster zone earlier on, but it's looking quite reasonable now.
And I don't think Russia is going to forgive the NATO mercenaries who collaborated with Ukrainian to kill civilians, do you? I think there'll be a Nuremberg Trials Part 2, no matter how much. It'll be a question. The interesting question for me is going to be, Trump has withdrawn from the WHO and he's threatening to withdraw from not just the ICC, but also the UN, isn't he?
It may well do, yes. Possibly.
And if that goes ahead, we may well see a BRICS more equal United Nations replace it, which would be interesting, because I can't see the Americans liking no longer having a veto, and the Zionists won't like having three votes with Ukraine, with the UK, France and America. Do you?
I don't think they withdraw from the UN, because I think it gives them a vote. And that's the point, a veto on everything that the UN does.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely. But I actually think they could withdraw from NATO, you know. Not because they're hostile to all the aims of NATO, not at all, but because NATO becomes too much of a burden on US imperialism, which is going down the plug hole. And US imperialism has always been the overarching force in NATO, and the various European powers have been its secondary instruments. But this is Trump. He's complaining about the costs, isn't he? So he's demanding that all these various European countries spend 5% of their GDP on weaponry, which the US doesn't actually do, right? But that's actually a huge leap in costs. And they're not going to be able to do it because all these countries are in economic dire straits because of the Ukraine war and other things, but mainly the Ukraine war. So they're not going to be able to do it. So I think that Trump is. It's perfectly possible for a US presidency to downgrade NATO or even to walk away, because if the US is losing its world power, it has to reconsolidate it and think of other ways of doing things. You know, NATO might not be the only game in town. It doesn't mean they've renounced imperialist alliances. It might mean that they simply want to reorganise them and not be the main force that subsidises it. You know, yeah, I think it's quite possible. Whether that's how it will happen, I don't know, but it's certainly possible, because a declining power will try to cut its losses. You know, and the US is a declining power. And it's a declining hegemonic power, which we never really had that before, you know, because there's nobody to replace it apart from a bunch of third world countries and Russia and China, who are seen as super third world countries in a way, right? They're not seen as rival imperialists, you know, except in the eyes of some people on the left who are gullible, you know. Yeah, sorry, Marie.
Yeah, I would like to make a comment about this. It is very interesting to look outside the box about this question of NATO. It seems to me that the day the United States would decide to do without NATO would be the day it decides to use nuclear weapons. This is just my opinion, you know.
I'm very sorry to say, unfortunately, Marie, I agree. Agree with you. I think the biggest worry at the moment is that the US is continually trying to, you know, it plays its war games, and every scenario says America loses and therefore has to resort to nuclear war, and their first strike policy would be a nightmare. But I think that's what's happening with Russia and China, Iran and even North Korea, and eventually, I suspect, Yemen, will be this hypersonic missiles offer the only protection that says they can at least shoot down the majority of them in America. It's the danger is how many military bases America has around the world to try and to get closer. Yeah, because the reason Russia doesn't want NATO and doesn't want Ukraine in NATO is because it is perfectly placed to hit Moscow and St. Petersburg within, you know, 5 minutes, even though its nuclear weapons are nothing like as fast as the hypersonic missiles that would be sent first, which is why the new Russia doctrine, the new nuclear doctrine, says that they will not have a first strike unless they can see signs that America is preparing to launch a first strike. Yes, and now that puts us on a very dangerous, you know, a dangerous situation. It's far worse than even it was in the 60s, when they had between 10 and 20 minutes to see whether or not the other side were going to start nuclear war. You know, it's down to a few minutes. It's unbelievably dangerous. Yes.
Anyway, is there anything else we can...
But Marie, the US did use it first.
They tested it.
They didn't just test it, they used it. This is the farce of the awfulness of Japan, you know, not exactly celebrating Hiroshima, but remembering Hiroshima, and almost accusing the Russians of using it when, you know, we know it was the Americans who used it, but it's like they've blanked it out.
Yep.
Same way as the Poles have blanked out that the Russians liberated Auschwitz.
But
it seems to me we should go back to the question of the conclusion, which is the United Front. You know,
yeah.
Be more preoccupied about this. Otherwise, it's all a matter of what the people with power are doing. But what do we do, and what can we do?
I do feel that we need to start with the political prisoners in the UK. We need to start with, you know, Gaza has united people who never thought about the moral question. Protests in favor of the Palestinians and their right to fight occupation. And, you know, the real thing about imperialism is it needs colonies. And colonies cannot survive if you support the right of people to oppose being occupied. Yes? So this is why the imperialist forces cannot accept a Palestinian state, because it's an occupied territory and it denies the right of colonialist settlers to stay in the country they are occupying. Yes?
Yeah.
So if we, you know, if nothing else, we must support political prisoners. And you can see that with Starmer at the moment, where we have people who have protested against about Gaza and genocide, which we are, you know, which the international community agrees is genocide, but they are locking people up for anything up to 15 months now, it will be. Yes, in prison, treated as counter-terrorists, lots of them in solitary confinement, and they are being treated as political prisoners. I'm not saying they're, you know, they're not prisoners in the way that Israel is doing it, but they are the same thing, and this is the slippery slope, you know, and it's like, you know, it will become an avalanche, because what happens with political prisoners with a clear thing like Gaza will descend into, well, now you can't fight climate change because fossil fuel energy companies will be destroyed. Now you can't fight Occupy Britain because the banks won't be able to foreclose on mortgages if people squat in buildings that are being reclaimed because the mortgage rates are going up, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going to snoop on bank accounts, which means pensioners, you know, eventually the 50% of the poor will have, that are the poor in this country, will have their every last penny they spend snooped on to make sure that they're not supporting, even with a small amount of money, opposition forces to the ruling class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, where fascism starts, I don't know. But that's, I think we start by supporting political prisoners, people who are being locked up or confined to home, yes, for opposing the ruling class, the government, the deep state, the military forces, the police. Yeah?
Well, I think it's a matter of course that we support all these things.
You know? Absolutely.
But what we need to do is be a political sort of like a yeast. We actually have to be the force that puts forward the point about the need to politically confront the situation we are in now. We will not get anywhere without a party on the left. You know, if we don't have a party, we're powerless. You know, the party is the point, and that's why we're involved in the SLN. You know, to try and make that. Bring that to a larger group of people, you know.
You don't see any hope for the, what do they call them, the what are the Jeremy Corbyn, the independents?
Well, I think they need to be engaged with. We should engage with them, but in the end, they have to be involved in a party as well. You know, being an independent is not enough.
You need what do they call themselves? It's not the consortium. They have got a name. The collective, yes.
But that's not a party yet. It might become one.
But that's how things grow, doesn't it?
Maybe. Yeah. But we need a convention of the left or something like that. You know, somewhere that all these forces can get together and thrash out a basic platform to actually stand in the elections.
Maybe what we really need to do is to define, you know, just people do not know anymore what's like right and left in the same way that they once did. I'm not saying that there is no difference, but there have become blurring of the lines in terms of many of the different policies. We may know what we mean by left, but it's quite shocking that there are still people who think, as you say, you said earlier, that Starmer is a communist, that people called Biden a communist. And you're going, what on earth are you talking about, you know?
Well, that's Trump, you know, but I don't think you'll find many of the class-conscious workers in support of Trump.
I didn't say they would, but you'd be amazed how many Republicans call Biden a communist.
I know you would, yes, I agree.
Yeah, and, you know, how many Tories and Reform and others call Starmer a communist? I mean, he's not even a socialist, for crying out loud, but, you know, but he's certainly not nowhere near a communist.
Most people are barking on him.
I think they've done that on purpose. Right have done that on purpose.
Yeah.
Because it discredits socialism and communism. So anything, and the Tories actually put on a good show when they're interviewed. They either get very angry about figures like Corbyn, or they mock them and laugh at them. And they do it deliberately so that the public think that socialism and communism is a dirty word. It's very well contrived. And of course, some people in the Tory party don't know what the left is anyway. People like Baden and Dock are stupid. They don't know what the left is. They don't understand politics. It's just, it's ridiculous that they think that, and they're spreading the word, and there's a lot of people out there that do think that Starmer's a communist, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah. But, you know, in the same way that Professor Morandi absolutely wiped the floor with all those people who thought Iran was Islamist. Yes. It takes a few really good people to actually demolish these, you know, fake arguments, and then we have to keep pushing it home.
Anyway, yeah. Is there anything else we need to urgently discuss? Because I think we're winding down, aren't we? People have gone, actually. Paul's gone.
All I can say is thank you, Ian.
Yes.
Really
thank
good.
You.
I will have a discussion in 2 weeks' time on that Trotsky thing, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then, as I said, but do you think that if we've made a push on political prisoners, that it would help us with the protests?
Well, I think the whole left needs to do that, and I think they are. To
yeah.
A degree, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of...
joining the dots to show that the geopolitics, that foreign and domestic politics when it comes to the suppression and the oppression of political opinions, yes?
Yeah.
Is something that goes across the board. And it is the two-tier justice system that's allowing people like Tommy Robinson to have a protest march through London, but trying to stop ones
that is just the nature of the bourgeois state. You know, the bourgeois state will always persecute the left. That's a fact. You know, it's always, it will, it's just not changed. And all this bullshit from the right about the two-tier Kier, all this sort of thing, preferential treatment for the far left is just rubbish, because they were burning down buildings and engaging pitch battles with the cops over what their right to attack people in the streets, to burn down refugee hospitals and things.
Well, that's
I'll tell you something. We that you think I'm joking? I think we should stop the recording now and go on to any other business, yeah? Is that all right?
Yeah.
I'll stop the recording.
I agree.